The Lord's help, we will speak from Psalm 127 in the first verse. Psalm 127 in the first verse. Except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain to build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waiteth but in vain. Except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain to build it. Except the Lord keep the city, watchman waketh but in vain. How the Old Testament saints must have wondered what this verse meant. What house is that is being referred to? Is it bricks and mortar? They used but little of this in their day. It was it made? What house they would have thought, what is this that David is speaking of? Except the Lord build a house. Do we know what he was speaking of? God written us about temple matters to this extent. Except he builds a house that they labor in vain that build it. Or is there some other meaning behind? Is it really a word here among so many other Old Testament words that were due for a complete unfolding in the years to come? How the Apostle Paul must have rejoiced in this word when he uses in several of his epistles, one of which we read, this remarkable house that he built in the Church of God. As we read together, where he says, in whom all the building fitly framed together grow unto a holy temple in the Lord. This is just one of his several references. And as you know, Paul was well versed in the Old Testament. And I doubt not that while he looked at this but how blessed was the unfolding of this truth that he began to see that as his eyes were open to see the unfolding of God's purposes. In the Church of God. And as he saw this laboring and himself a builder in his epistle to the Corinthians, he speaks of a wise master builder. And he does not take the credit for this himself. He does not say that he has set out his life to be a wise master builder. he states that we are laborers together with God. And it is this which undoubtedly Holy Ghost unfolded to him as contained in the Old Testament. So that there are two things here. First of all, the hope, and then the business, or the labour. And the point of issue is this, that except the Lord build that, they labour in vain at work. Appeared in the gospel not how Solomon says. Because there is a building, and it's growing. And it will grow, and it will grow until the time that the last stone is taken out of the quarry of nature and built into this cliff. It will continue by means of labouring. It will be calling, fitting in. Who they are, no one knows. But God himself. So that the church is permitted to pay their most contented and happy view of the security of salvation. Not one to five. There shall not be a single element missing, person, and the supreme work is, as he says to the Ephesians, that ages to come, these ages, that in the ages to come he might show the exceeding riches of his kindness toward us through Christ Jesus. Which he's done, and he's doing. So that this view, as well as this warning of this text, is most blessed. And unless we are brought to the solid foundation of the truth in this text, we shall have every notion of vital godliness and real living. We shall think it's something that anyone can come along and do it, but it can be accomplished with a certain amount of labour. But we shall be wrong. It will not be, it cannot be. It is this, therefore, that is of such great importance. Oh, that this grave, which the Apostle speaks of here, is the alone work of God and the proven to be so. And those that prove it are absolutely clear in their hearts of the remarkable nature of the saving grace of God. There's beautiful parallel to this in the old temple, the stones for that temple were cut out from the quarries a long way away from the temple site. But they were all marked by a very skilled architect and designer for their particular place in the temple. This was skillful work. it's easy with certain length and certain length. It's time to cut out curves. Those who come rocky first, or those say to Portland or somewhere like that, and see thousands of these massive curves all lying cut out. Knowing something of the hard work that it is for the corridor, and we consider that these ancients who built the temple and these men who designed it according to a foreknown pattern. They were exceedingly skillful men, and those quarries still remain. And out of these were cut the stone, and they were cut to shape, they were carefully pressed. And then they were brought to the temple, and they were put in place. So for skill and determination and ability, God gives me every faith, and God gave such ability to these ancient builders, just the same as he did for those men and women who constructed the tabernacle. The room that they were endowed with a special ability, both men and women, for the tabernacle work. You read it, you see. Not only the materials, but the ability to do it. And you see this. And also how that glorious temple of Solomon was built. You see, God has set out a pattern. People go and look at a cathedral today, and they say, what a remarkable piece of work it is. Chosen, the envy of the world, under their solidarity. They not thrown over with the first temple. Take a look at Shoresby's Park, the tallest in the country. You see any sign of it moving again? Marvelous is the ability given to man. But then, when we consider beyond this, there is another building, Church of God, where the stones are taken out of the quarry. Look under the hole of the pit, says the prophet Isaiah, went through the dig. Do where you came from. Look at your beginning. Do what you will. When you consider that these are quite passive, they have no effort of their own. You may press the parallel very closely. Because Peter speaks of living stones. He also is living stones. Well, that's a rather strange word, isn't it? Have you ever seen a living stone? You'd be amazed, so should I, if you saw a stone. Look how so God allows his people to be instructed by these things that are so real in the spiritual world of man. If the stone, therefore, in the cross, taken out and brought to the proper shop, he speaks of them in a different way in the 19th verse, that they're no more strangers or foreigners. Well, same fruit that spread very beautifully in the same way. No more striker or foreigner. This especially in countries with a cosmopolitan crowd, like they were in Ephesus, the philosophy in those ancient countries, like our own countries coming to, you go to London today, you'll find a vast cross section of people from different nations. When you come to the Church of God, they are all taught the same language, which is the breaking down of the barrier, which is the need of the language barrier, which of course it is. You can't speak the language of a country you're not in. No more a stranger or a foreigner, but a fellow citizen, but who with? They're wonderful company, surely, aren't they? Saints. Well, this is a holy word, isn't it? You wouldn't care to use it for yourself, would you? Nor should I. You go far from being one of those, don't you? Why does he use it? Because it's true. I put your head in the dust, let me put mine in there. Who made it make a thief a difference? But another, and what is thou which thou didst not receive? Fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God. Now, this is another thing you can't claim. You can be entertained by your friends. Your household is your household. Mother, father, and the children. And other relatives, blood relatives. That's your household, really. I know you can adopt. By and large, the household is that company that received into the home as part of the household. You're part of your household, aren't you? I'm not, although I'm always very welcome to any of your homes, aren't I? And I've been for years. But as far as your household is concerned, I don't contribute a penny towards running it. But if I were in need of a home, I'd be reckoned to come to you and get one, couldn't I? Yes? How is it? But I'm not of your household as such. But the household of who? My God. So if you've got to have a building before you can have a household, so that except the Lord build the house, they labour in vain that build it. Now what does this mean? Briefly, it means that nobody can imitate, copy effectively, or bring apart the work of divine grace and salvation. But do they try to? Are there those who try to build a household of faith, or a household of God? Are there those who try to make people no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens, are there? Indeed they are. And they're getting more common than ever. Error. false teacher, false Christ, false religion, empty donor, social religion, a religion that's founded upon nice people's behavior, founded upon the things of the world, the fashions of the world, all those things which enable people to mix together. They are very, very common in the religious world today. Very common. And they are like a fungus. They're like leaven in the dough. They work very subtly. Their great attraction is to younger people. They regard them as being harmless. They say there's no harm in this, no harm in that. Neither is there harm if you're a worldly. You can take almost anything with that. But when it comes to the things of God, the call coming out from among the things that that does not admit of any life of it. And that which the gospel may encourage to be the work of God. Though the call is coming out from among them and bring you shepherd, touch not the unclean thing and I will receive you. That is one of God's gracious calls and promises which he gives an ear to listen to, a heart to understand them. And therefore it must be so. It is his work to effectively bring us out of the world. It's therefore a false labourer who seeks by his own efforts, pride of his own heart, whatever abilities he or she may have to convert. Why, it's a veritable impossibility. Not the will of man, says the Apostle John, but the will of God. So that these that labour in vain are deceivers. And labelled such in the scripture. And Jesus warned the perfidious disciples. And even in the early church, John in his general epistle said, for many deceivers have gone out into the world. And this deception we're all subject to because we've got the nature of it in our heart. It isn't as if we were going to be injected with something later on in life. It isn't as if we were born without it and that we're going to develop it when we attain the truth. We are born with this deceitful heart. It is in us. We are not inoculated with it or against it. We cannot have anything done to us, any truth that's given to us, whereby we can rid ourselves of our inbred deceitfulness. Now this doesn't mean to say that it's practice and that the whole world is corrupt. Through God's restraining mercy, there are hundreds and hundreds of people who are absolutely honest, straight as a die, morally instructed, like you should be, as to what your own, which you may find. There are many who would hesitate to see you. And you know from the fact that they don't hesitate to desecrate the Sabbath day of justice. But as regards this deceitful power, it is in us. Therefore, we've got to be doubly careful. It isn't as if you could say of it, well, it's there, like, shall we say, a bottle of poison on the mantelpiece or in the medicine chest. You wouldn't think of taking down Joe's pillow, would you, reading it? No. You know that it's poison. But this deceitful heart is in us. And therefore, it's got to be proved. You don't believe it. It may be because you don't know. And there are those of us that can well remember the time when we just didn't believe. It could be over 1,000 of us. But this is the point. These labourers. And we ourselves, as men and women, are liable to be deceived on the solemn matter of the building of the house of Christ. But to look at the positive side of it, for that is the more profitable side, we find that the Apostle says, first of all, for by grace are ye saved through faith, that's not of yourself. Now, supposing we just read it, by grace are ye saved through faith. That would be true. That would stand the test. But you see how God binds up things. And how he gives no loophole. And hence, the apostle does not leave it here. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourself. And does he leave it there? It is a gift of God. A gift, is it? As I told my people, I think, last Sunday. If you pay for it, you've got all the other gifts of feeling of that. And if somebody gives it, or the vast difference. You young people, if you go and buy something, you bring it home, well, it's yours, isn't it? Your brother can't say that he wants it, your sister can't say she wants it. It's yours. You've got the feeling of absolute strength. But when it comes to gift, no one else can say that they want it, it's true. But you've got this sense of possession about that it was given to you. And you are indebted to the giver. So with grace, we are debtors. This is one then of the first blessings of God and speech to accept the Lord feel that he brings his people into this day. If they owe him something, what have they got? Does he expect payment? Ask him, no. In what way then are they in debt? You read the 8th of Romans in the early verses, you find that Paul says, therefore, brethren, we are debtors. Not to the flesh, to live after the flesh. If you live after the flesh, you shall die. This indebtedness is wrought in the heart. This isn't a day's work or a month or a year. It's God's building. A realization of a change wrought in the heart, as this first verse says in the second of Ephesians. Again, the figure changes. But oh, how wicked. What is this wickedness? You have no knowledge of your own quickening, actually. Right beyond the ken of your understanding. Actually, it works in you. Actually, I think you prove it by your very life. You could not be here if you want. So that it's a very suitable verb that Paul uses when he says that you have people who were dead in trespasses and sins. Except the Lord build the house, except the Lord quicken. Now how beautifully this puts it in its proper place, doesn't it? It tells one that how peace-giving or comforting to your soul if you become the resistance to these truths in the depth of the experience of the little death. You feel well there, that's true. I had nothing to do. It was God that first came to me. God first broke into my life, brought life to me, gave me feelings, made me to look into his world, taught me to cry. It was God that put the skin in all these things, therefore, to be free gift. And it is received as that, in the sense of indebtedness, is wrought in the heart. And this indebtedness must, of course, bring a closer relationship. This is how God dealt in years ago with Abraham and such a lot. He came to them. He came to Noah. Told them to build a house. He came to Abraham. He came to Jacob. Jacob didn't make that pillar of stones that night on his way when he left home and called upon God. He laid down a bed sleep. God paid him, met him. And in meeting him, brought to him salvation. In the knowledge of his adoption. Jacob is indebted to God. He expresses it later on when he says, I am not worthy. The least of all the mercies and the truth which I have shown myself. This is the building. This is the true indebtedness to God. For his sovereign mercy, grace, and favor, but it's a building. Something solid about it, real, and it's going to go on. That's the same as those stones in the temple. They had to be shaken. The hammer, the chisel. Yes, they had to be shaken. They had to be brought to the right place. So, with the Lord dealing with his people in their hearts, he deals with their emotions and affections. He brings them to feel where they've got nothing to boast. Nothing to boast except the Lord will they have. This building then the apostle views as he runs on down this chapter and sees those that were once walking according to the course of this book, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also the Lord. This is a beautiful part of it. You can't imagine a thing more beautiful than this as regards the pure apostle, can you? We all, didn't say you, as much as to say what I did. I can't stand here and say you. No, I have to stand here and say we all. There is no exception. No deal. And this is what is so marked in the Old Testament saints. We take Daniel, Jeremiah, Ezra, and they were brought to a sense of their need of God, confession to him. They identified themselves with the people. They had some pretty rough people to deal with, the great sinners. But Daniel doesn't say, Lord, thy are sin. And he says, we are sin. You read the night of Jeremiah and not to Daniel. He identifies himself with it. This brings about the spirit of the household or the learning the language. And when you come to learn language, you can't read a chapter, and it's not a book. You've got to start with a short phrase. But although I don't want to press it too hard, I believe in grace, we've got to learn, like the children now, the ABC of things. And learn to pray our words of love. But this is the spirit of it. And when you find two brought together, you come with one. They may not be long in the world. They may not have a great deal to say, but what they do say fits together. They can't talk for hour upon end about religion. But what they do say in perhaps 5 minutes happens in their song. And one can understand that and say, yes, I know what you mean. This is where grace is so beautiful in its youth. That the older saint, hearing a remark from the younger one, will be shocked. So that person is speaking the language of Cain. That person is no son. They don't talk like that if they do. They've got something about them that attracts me to them. They feel at once. So they know no one says that. Something moving. This is God doing it. And how different this is from all the forms of religion, social religion. You can be as friendly and nice as you like. Oh, yeah. As I've often said, with regard to us ministers, we can make ourselves as friendly and affable as we like in your home. We can't give ourselves a place in your heart. only God can do. And that's right. And once he does that, there's a building up. And that's the faith. It is a building. So it is a church. Look at the reality of the Church of God, which Paul is writing to here. There they were banded together, of one mind, of one heart. Well, what would they find in common? By what God has done for them. You stop to think of the various walks in life in which they've been brought. The various characteristics these people bore. See what a vast difference there was in. But it doesn't make any difference, you see, what you are. Grace level. It takes away all distinction. It brings young and old together. All walks of life. Aquila and Priscilla were humble tent makers. Apollos was a leather tent. But they got on well together. All they walked in harmony. Though Apollos had a lot to learn of the things of God in the Spirit, Peter and Priscilla expounded unto him the way of God more clearly, more perfectly. And he, all honour to him, listened. He didn't say to the world, who are you to talk to me about this? You were only tent makers, which is a very humble call. And this is one of the beauties of this building also, which we may notice. You've become a good listener. This remarkable ear gate that Bunyan speaks about when God builds up, you become a listener. So much that you realize life can do when you go out into life and come up against competition. And this is now. It won't take long for young people to get out into life and mix with other people before they realize there is. That's not something to be ashamed of. Of course it is. You can't know everything. You can't put an old head on one shoulder. But what it does do is to show you how much more you've got to do. And there's nothing better suited. So we listen. That's a good listener. This is one of God's ways of building. To make his people good listeners. And he calls it hunger. He calls it thirst. As if they came to the Word of God, to the services of God's house, as he was ordained, as those who would drink a good drink, as those who would eat a good meal, which in the spiritual terms, they're ready to do. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. So, as well as being in debt and learning some of the language, there is this list. How beautiful this is, isn't it? When the Lord unlocks the ear. And the things that you closed your ear to before, you wouldn't listen to, you now catch every bit. beautiful thing here in the household of faith. I've heard of those young people who have followed the older ones home from chapel, merely for the sake of hearing what they said about the sermon. I know from when they were young, they just followed on behind to listen to what the older ones had to say. They wanted to gather up the paper. They wanted to catch their spirit. That it was accepting the Lord's will. Well, what can man do to make you a good listener? Can he be a good speaker? Yes. Can he have a use of very suitable language? Yes. He can have all natural abilities. It may please you as a hearer that you gather naturally, but he may be a captain or a different man. He may somehow be familiar. He may not be able to pronounce some of them. Why, some of the old deacons and ministers, when they came to a hard word, they used to say, hard word, and pass on. When it comes to getting home and taking a Bible down, they couldn't read. They just couldn't read the word. Evening home, and yet they came home. And what was one of the first things they tried to do? To learn to read. And you know, people who the Lord dealt with could read the word. And one godly, and he went to the funeral of the pastor of the little chapel where he lived. And the minister preached on the 14th of Job, man dies and wastes away. He giveth up the ghost and where is. And the Lord passed on those words in this man's home at this funeral. He took me to the gravesite where his pastor was buried. And he got someone to show him that verse, and he learnt the verse. Having learnt the verse, he then learnt the chapter. He didn't have to call in any teachers, he did it himself. Nobody could teach. And from there he went on to read. So in his latter days, he could read as well as you or I. You read the sermon, but I'm talking about listening. Except the Lord here to have, does he make you hungry and thirsty if you come to hear? Or this is the reality of worship, you know. You say, well, we've got this to so and so Sunday, and you think to yourself, well, we like it. Yes, he may. But you may go home as dry and barren as it possibly be. All you like it. Why? Why? Why do you have to listen? You have to listen as a hungry soul, a thirsty soul. You have to have to hear and hear that God alone can give. So you could have the Prince of Preachers in the same position, but you come hungry and thirsty. If you prove a thought once, I don't know. It doesn't matter who the master is, it's God that worketh in you and in him. So that in this great matter of listening, what building we have in the true church of God. Because you see, how you can be built up, your most holy faith is fitting together is another beautiful thing, in whom all the building fitly frame together and grow it. Fitly frame. Don't look upon it as you regard preachers, will you? It's been awkward and crooked. Leave that to the heavenly builder. He will see to that. Your concern and mine is for him to fit us into the building. Yeah. I could speak, couldn't I? That cement, the fire, as I felt it there. That wonderful fire you must have in a building, cement. The secret of some of these old castles and buildings of ours as regards to cement, they tell me it's not. We can't make cement today like the roof. Is that true or not? I'll leave it to you, but I'm positive of this, that there's no difference in the finding cement and the gospel. The good master builder being able to bind hearts together in love and gospel affection. He's able to let your heart blend with another, bind you in that sacred way that you never could do. Through the Philemon's epistle. See there, Paul refers to the bond of the gospel that he sends Onesimus back again to his former master and refer to the bond of the gospel. This glorious gospel you see is God's work and it's his building work. And accept the Lord's builder as a laboring minded